Thanks for downloading this episode of Cork Talk with me, Tim Atkin. A weekly conversation with some of the most famous people in the world of wine.
This podcast is brought to you in partnership with Nomacork by Vinventions. Driven by a commitment to innovation, the new plant-based Nomacork Green Line offers significant improvements in wine closure performance. Thanks to a rigorous oxygen ingress rate, you can decide which cork is best for your wine, whether it's for young and fresh wines or for those with aging potential.
As winemaking director of Grupo Peñaflor, Daniel P. is at the helm of one of the biggest wine producers in the world. He's widely recognised among the most talented winemakers in Argentina. Architecture's loss is very much wine's gain. We talk about his first job in the wine industry, making a pineapple-based RTD, believe it or not, the potential he sees in Argentina's white wines, his personal project, Tres Catorce, and the many and diverse styles of Argentinian Malbec. Hi, Danielle, how are you?
Hi, Tim. Nice to hear you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
And you too. Where are you at the moment?
Oh, I'm at home here in the suburbs of Mendoza in Chacas de Coria, which is like 15 kilometers south.
And a very nice bit of the city, really, or just south of the city. Listen, you were born in Mendoza, which is, as many people know, the wine capital of Argentina. I just wondered, when you were growing up, whether wine played any part in your life. Did your parents have any vines, as so many people do in Argentina?
Stand alone in my family with the wine. I started, let's say, when I was like 16 years old. So I decided to be a winemaker at that time. No one in my family, they only drink wine, and they do it very frequently.
Like everybody, yeah?
yeah. And I did as well, of course.
What did they drink back in those days?
Those days, let's say, was the middle 70s, and in Argentina we used to drink like more than 90 liters per head of wine. Of course, usually people drink mostly, let's say, table wine or very, what do you call, entry-level wines that were sold in bottles of 1 liter with a screw cap at that moment. And you go with the empty bottle, and you get your wine with a discount because you are sending the old bottle
and they filled it up again.
Yeah, they wash it and fill it back. So that was very. No, if you think about it, this is like 40 something years ago, nearly 50 years ago. It was very. Today is very common practice to wash and recycle at some point and use the screw cap. But it was like a time where everything was forbidden and it should be new and corked and etc. But today, at that time, it was this kind of wine. I remember it was a Panquehua dry. This is why when my father asked me to buy when I was a kid.
Then or crispy or termidor, those wines? Was that the days of termidor? No.
The Termidor was later because Termidor was born with the Tetra Pak. So in Argentina, there were like a law that didn't allow to bottle the wine where the wine is consumed at some point. So there were many bottling facilities in Buenos Aires. So the wine was shipped to Buenos Aires by train in bulk, and there it was bottled. And here in Mendoza, there were as well some wineries that bottled the wine as well. But mostly of the wine was bottled in Buenos Aires because, as you know, Buenos Aires, the capital of Argentina and surroundings, probably is half of the population of Argentina there.
Yeah.
So when the law didn't allow to bottle a destination, and you had to bottle all the wine at origin, it was a waste of, say, time and money, because you had to ship the bottles from Mendoza to Buenos Aires and send the empty bottles back to Mendoza to be washed refilled. So
and filled again. Yeah.
So the idea was, okay, we have to find out a very convenient, let's say, disposable recipient for the wine. So it came the Tetra Pak. So the Tetra Pak was
born.
Light. Yes, and it was usually used for milk, not for wine. At that time, we started doing that, and Termidor began with that, and then everybody used today
Tetra Pak
for doing that.
You studied enology at university, as you said, although you started out studying architecture, and then your first job in the drinks industry with a company that made pineapple cocktails, I believe, among other things. What was that? Where did the pineapples come from?
Yeah. It was very funny because we used to drink like we call anana fizz, that means like pineapple fizz, fizzy pineapple. It was a mixture of sparkling white wine with pineapple pulp, let's say, and sugar. So the pineapple we imported from Mexico in cans, in 80 cans, no? Like 5 kilos each. So we had to open it, crush them, add sugar and some colloid to make the pulp remain into the juice, not to settle down in the bottom of the bottle.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't not a very glamorous start, possibly, but you carried on studying, didn't you? You kept studying at night, didn't you? And you developed an expertise in white wines. I'm just interested in how you think Argentinian white wines have changed in the last 35, 40 years while you've been making wine.
Well, when I was working at that winery, I was working at the university as a researcher. And at that time, it was the early 80s. In Argentina, it was very popular, and I think around the world, the white wine consumption. So it was a change in the style of the consumption. The consumers went from rosé, red, and then came to white. It was the time, and in other places in the world, Riesling was very popular. And so we asked to study the reaction of the varieties that we have planted. There were very tiny amounts of Sauvignon Blanc, Chardonnay, mainly, and Torrontés, in the reaction against the oxidation and the precursors of the oxidation and the role that the fining agents into the oxidation of the wine and oxygen heavy metals like copper or iron. There were a lot of things, and I present this work in a congress in Bento Gonzalez, the Latin American winemaking and viticulture congress that usually take place once a year in different places in South America. So it was my first time to hesitate with public and say it were like probably 400 people, and I was very scared with my PowerPoint. At that time, doing that, it was like it used to be like, we call filminas, like a piece of cellulose that you put in a retro projector. But I used it the first PowerPoint for in the middle of the 80s, and it was complicated to use, but I was happy to do that. So it was 1989, something.
Yeah, and a huge change in style. So Argentina's gone from producing oxidized white wines to producing fresh white wines like most people these days, yeah?
Yeah, and there was a change in the enology. We were coming from the corrective enology. So we make wine and then we see the collateral damages after the fermentation. Mm. And you have to solve all those problems that you had during the fermentation, all the crushing and fermentation with high temperatures and bad presses, etc. So it was the change from that moment where we had to correct the wines at some point, to manipulate the wines in order to make it easier or approachable to the consumer, to the predictive, let's say, predictive enology, to be before or having a damage. So
or preventive, yeah.
Preventive. Yeah. Correct. Yeah. And we were working on that during the 90s. So having better technology, better varieties as well, planting better vineyards in the adequate places. And wines, obviously, they change a lot. It's tremendous. And today, even today, we are doing a lot of efforts to, say, promote or let the consumer taste our white wines in Argentina, because it's very, let's say, the Malbec is so strong that nobody pays attention to our whites. And the whites, I think we are doing fantastic white wines in general.
I agree. I think it's almost been the biggest change for me of the last decade. I mean, you started with pineapple wine, then you went to white wines, then you made your name really in San Juan, which people listening, many will know, is Argentina's second biggest wine region after Mendoza. Is it true that you were the first person to plant Syrah there and Viognier?
There were some Syrah, they called Valsemina. At that time, it was a confusing in the name of the varieties. But Syrah was already planted. There were a few hectares of Syrah that I vinified, and I found out that it's a quite nice variety for a warm climate as San Juan. So I started in Peñaflor in 1992. And in 1993, I went to France, southern France, and I saw, it was my first contact with Viognier. With a winery which was dedicated for varietal wines in southern France, named Fortin de France. Mm-hmm. And I love the wine, and I say, okay, let's bring some material to Argentina. So I brought Viognier in 1993. We planted first time. And we had a few rows because it was a kind of experimental, and I made the first Viogniers, you know, in the experimental way. Let's say I have one in barrel, in American, in French, in stainless steel, with maceration or without. So, but I had only let's say 500 cases in total. It was 4,500 liters. And
well,
I remember
it's very well.
Yeah, but I remember it was the buyer of the COP in UK. His name, I think, is still running or doing something in the business, which is his name is Paul Bastard. Mm-hmm. Paul came to San Juan at that time, and I said, Paul, you are more familiar with this. Please tell me if I did something wrong with the Viognier. What is your opinion about this? And he says, we blend all together. And I said, I will buy all. It was very fantastic. It was
It's the kind of buyer you like. I mean, you then went to the north. You were in Cafayate for a while, and then you were appointed in 2003 head winemaker at Trapiche, yeah? And that was where you started to work closely with the growers who supplied the company. And the Terroir series was born in 2003. Can you tell us a little bit about the Terroir series and how it started, focusing on Malbec parcels?
Yeah, I took the all the winemaking and viticulture for Trapiche in 2003, as you say. It was my first vintage, and I was visiting different growers that were with us. We had more than 70 growers of Malbec in the Yuko Valley, and I didn't know them because I was coming from San Juan back to Mendoza. And visiting one of them, the Villafañe, I met the two brothers that were running the vineyard, and I say, okay, I present myself, and I want to have your grapes again. Are you comfortable with Trapiche? Yeah, we love it. But, you know, the last word is the word of my father, our father. You say, But how old are you? No, I'm 78. My brother is 80. And where's your father? My father is at home. He's 103 years old. Felipe Benicio is a funny. And I met him. I have some pictures and make a video. And I said, there is a lot of people in Mendoza running vineyards. He planted his vineyard in 1945. He never had the possibility to get a bottle of wine with his name in the label. So I came to the marketing people and said, we should rescue those people, these people, and the history, the stories that there are behind these guys. And that's why we create the rare series or single vineyards coming from growers, different growers that tell their stories. And this is very, for me, it's a fantastic thing. It's something very emotional for me, despite the wines are nice, but yeah. The stories are better.
And did he get to see the label with his name on it?
Yeah, he did it. He was so happy. He was almost blind, remember. And when he passed away, unfortunately, you know, their sons were very old, pretty old, you know, what about 18 years old. So they abandoned the vineyard, and it was so sad to know that. It's one of the things. I still have wines, so I said, okay, the wine of Felipe, you know, surpasses him, survives
him.
Survives him. And one day you come here, we can have some bottles of this. It's a fantastic wine. I always...
Yeah, well, I'd
love 2003, to. 2003, so 17
years. Oh, you've got some. Okay, we should try it as a tribute to him, really.
Yeah.
I'd want to talk a little bit about the other side of the country. I mean, most of Argentina's vineyards are close to the Andes, but you were the first person, really, to see the potential of the Atlantic coast for viticulture. What was it that convinced you that you could grow grapes in Chapadmalal, which is near Mar del Plata, to the south of Buenos Aires?
Well, there was a nighttime when in a estancia of a friend of mine. We were together with Marcelo Belmonte, and it was a very cool night in the middle of January. January here is summer, middle of the summer. And Chapadmalal, Mar del Plata, is the main beach for vacation of the Argentines. So we were wondering, it's so cold at night because of the breeze coming from the ocean, that so why we don't plant, we don't grow some grapes? So we do a research of the climatological things like rainfall and temperatures that we can get from the airport at that time. And we find out that there is a homoclimate with northern island of New Zealand. And we decided to plant some Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and Sauvignon Blanc, and other minor varieties like Ultraminer or Riesling, and some reds as well. But we came there with the idea this. The Pinot Noir and the Chardonnay, we thought that will never ripe enough to make some sparkling wine. That's what the main goal of doing this at that time. But we could ripe to 12.5% alcohol. Obviously, it's like a month later than the highest part here in the Upper Valley, because Chapadmalal is region, is in between region 1 and 2 in Winkler. Some years it's region 1, some other is region 2, but it's 1,400 degrees, growing degree days.
So that's the coldest for wine, it's the coldest. For wine, a wine region.
Yes, for sure. We had some frost problems usually, but the main problem that we do have there, or main challenge, is to deal with the wind. It's very windy because we are very close to the ocean, and the wind blows permanently. Yeah, but the wines are fantastic. I love the wines, and it goes very well with the cuisine, the food, because Mar del Plata is a main fishing port of Argentina. So, and there are beautiful restaurants and people who is cooking since we were there. The gastronomy in general improved a lot. And
well, it was pretty good when we went there.
Yeah, I remember when we had a Sarasa Negro. And you said you never had food like this in Argentina. I remember.
Well, seafood. Yeah. I want to talk about your own family project, which is called Tres 14, yeah, or Tres 14. What does the name mean, Tres 14?
Well, Tres 14 means, you know, my last name is P-I, and the number P is very, or always been with me. So everybody, when we discover P, when I was 10 years old, something like this, everybody started to tell me, to make jokes about me and bullying. I mean, hey, 314 or 314.
Okay.
So I say, okay, this everybody knows me as 314. I will put my name to make some weakness and some opportunity. And I named 314 because of the P number. So... And it's a challenging thing, and we started here at home in the garage, making a few barrels with my son and my daughter, and I love what we did, and we are doing a few bottles. It's not a lot; it's only say 4,000 bottles each or 5, depending on the year.
I mean, your daughter you've mentioned she's now training as a winemaker. Is she qualified yet, or nearly?
Yes, she is, and she's now in Australia. She's stranded there, but I think she will stay there at the moment. She's working in a small winery today. She was doing something at Penfold during the harvest, the 2012 harvest, which was very challenging because of all the fires, and today she's working at Dominique. Something in Yarra Valley.
In the Yarra Valley, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's the most important bit of advice you think you've given to her as a winemaker? What have you said to her to concentrate on?
Yeah, she has. I told her to be focused in the vineyard, a lot of focus, because when I started winemaking, viticulture wasn't a very important thing. As I told you, I started when it was a corrective winemaking. So all the problems, I remember one of the Pulenta say, "No worry, kid, your problem starts from the scale and inside. From the scale of the winery, outside is another people problem." So that was the concept in till the 1980 something, no? So pay attention to the vineyard, pay attention. So now she's pruning, she's working a lot in viticulture, trying to reach the quality of the grapes that we deserve to make your own wine. So she's paying attention on that, and she's doing quite well. By the way, she's also a graphic designer. So she started as a graphic designer.
And so she can design her own labels?
Yes, is what she did for us.
The 314 is her label.
Yeah, and Imperfecto as well.
Fantastic.
But having in mind the rules of the design is very nice also for creating wines, because wine at the end of the day is a design product coming from the vineyard to the bottle. So I think she will succeed at some point, hopefully.
I mean, since 2010, you've been the winemaking director of the whole Grupo Peñaflor, which is Argentina's biggest winery. So you've got a team of winemakers who work underneath you. And as I know, they've got very different personalities. Do you encourage them to express their personalities, or is there a Daniel P or a Peñaflor style that they have to follow?
How you can say the flavor of the house, say at some point. Every winery has its own profile, taste, I think. So we have to develop that. But there are some other some wines where we have to be very respectful, because Trapiche is a big brand and consumers expect something from our wines. That it is a complicated thing at some point when you are a classic winery, but modern at some point, trying to explore and discover different things. But we have another, what we call lateral projects. So they are not the main role, it's a side, the side road, not the small road, where you can have this opportunity to express yourself. And this is something that we are doing. And every year we have different projects coming from the different winemakers expressing themselves in a lateral wines. So it's at some point, the Peñaflor style, they say it's not a Peñaflor style. For me, it's we are respecting different places where we grow grapes and trying to communicate the sense of place. This is the most important thing today for all of us. And everybody do it in their own way. Let's say the people in San Juan or people in Salta, Cafaldate, they are doing a fantastic job. And here in Mendoza as well. That's the way. Yes.
Go on. Yeah. Now, I was going to say, I want to talk to you about Malbec, which is obviously Argentina's most emblematic grape, most famous grape. Why do you think Malbec has been so successful in the last 20 years?
I have a friend of mine from Sicilian, who said Malbec is a sexy wine. And I think it's probably he's right at some point. Or is sexier than Carmenere at the point. But it's because I think the Malbec is very good looking. So you pour a Malbec wine in your glass and you see the color is very attractive. At some point, the nose usually is a lot of fruit coming. And you expect to have this dark, inky wine in your glass, and then you will have the sip, and probably you believe that it will destroy your tongue. But in fact, it has soft tannins, juicy, easy to drink. So it has a lot of appealing things, Malbec, I think, from the perspective of the sight and the smell and the taste.
And it reflects terroir, doesn't it? I mean, the different Malbecs from different parts of Argentina are very distinctive.
Yes, of course. But at the beginning, let's say when the fever of Malbec started, everybody make Malbec, let's say, Malbec from Argentina, then Malbec from Mendoza, Valle de Uco. And today we are trying to communicate more parcel wines or place wine coming from a particular place and shows the different personalities of Malbec. But the driver always is this, approachable wine. Easy drinking, not very complicated. I think is you can get in love at the first sight with the Malbec.
The first taste. Yeah.
And the first taste. And goes very well with the meat, the steak that we love a lot, but also with pasta. It's very plastic at some point, no? Depending on obviously in the style of Malbec that you are having, but you can have a very strong concentrated with bold tannins, or you can have a one from Agrelo, let's say, with deep soils, softer tannins, easy drinking, very gentle, or a wine from Salta, which is very spicy, also with strong tannins and very inky color. That shows a more roughness in the Malbec. So there are different styles. Or the one from Pedernal, which is very red fruit and juicy. All of them are nice.
I mean, they're very different, aren't they? I mean, the other thing about Argentina is that partly because of its heritage, which is, you know, Spanish and Italian and French to a certain degree. It has hundreds of varieties planted. I mean, not quite 100, but close. Which other varieties do you think have the most potential in Argentina, apart from Malbec?
We started, let's say, again, 2002, 2003. We had some parcels of Cabernet Franc. I truly believe that Cabernet Franc always gave me the impression of being better adapted to Cabernet Sauvignon compared to Cabernet Sauvignon in Argentina. And with the time, I think that, you know, I'm certain now that Cabernet Franc is another great variety that developed beautifully in Argentina. And we started to blend as well this Cabernet Franc with Malbec that works beautifully. And many other wineries isn't in the same today. So Cabernet Franc.
And what about more Argentinian varieties like Bonarda or Criolla Chica? Do you think they have a future?
It's quite complicated. I think, they are beautiful, but Criolla Chica you can have as well in Chile. They're doing a good job as well, and ourselves as well. We are doing a beautiful wine, Criolla, in Salta. But I think it will be like something like a niche, or it's not something that could be trendy as Malbec. Even Bonarda, we played a lot, we work a lot, but you know, it's our Bonarda, we call it finally Bonarda Argentina. But in fact, it's Corbeau or Charbono. That's the name that has abroad. And I think it's beautiful wine. It's a very easy drinking, very approachable. But we did a lot of efforts to make Bonarda succeeding, and it didn't work. Mm. Also, also Torrontés. You know, Torrontés is our native, the only native great variety that we have in Argentina, which is a natural crossing with Criolla Chica and Muscat Alexandria. And it's very aromatic, very nice, refreshing, goes well with Thai food, etc. But at the end of the day, it's a weird wine, no? It's something...
does Chardonnay have more potential than Torrontés? Yes, of course. Argentina. Is Chardonnay the best white grape for Argentina? Oh,
depending on the place, yes. I agree. To make very high quality wines, of course. And people and consumers understand that Chardonnay is the queen of the white grapes varieties, as Cabernet Sauvignon is the king.
Yeah.
Malbec
in Argentina.
Why not? For sure.
I mean, tell us a little bit about, you know, I'm interested, final question, what you do to get away from wine. I know that you're a very passionate drinker of wine and student of wine still. What do you do to get away from wine? I mean, do you still think about architecture from time to time, which you studied? Is it music? Is it walking? Is it cooking? What else do you like doing?
I like to do, I like hiking. We are very close to the mountains here, so I run away to walk in the mountains. I love it. Playing guitar is another thing, but I'm a frustrated musician. In architecture, I had the time, the possibilities to work together with different architects when we designed the new winery. So I'm very, let's say, happy to work together with famous famous architects to create wineries. And we did that for when we recovered the old Trapiche winery. It's like 15 years ago or 14 years ago. And last 3 years when we work with a architecture study here, which is very famous for making wineries, for making the Bember winery in Guatadari, which is for me one of the most beautiful wineries. And you have to come to know them when
looking forward to seeing it. Okay, so a bit of hiking, yeah? A bit of the guitar, I'm hoping you might play for me one day. And also a little bit of architecture. So, you know, you studied architecture and you've gone on being interested in architecture. Danielle, above all, it's the wines that you make that are very special and that we all enjoy drinking. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for spending time with us this afternoon. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Tim. You're a beautiful person.
Bye, Danielle.
Bye-bye. Ciao.
Bye.
Ciao.
Well, who would have guessed that Daniel P., one of the greatest winemakers in the world, started out making wines from pineapples? Next week on Cork Talk, I'll be chatting with Emily Faulkner, the winemaker of Viña Carmen in Chile. See you then. Thanks for listening to Cork Talk. If you want to read more reports, articles, and tasting notes by me, go to my website, timatkin.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, @timatkin, and on Instagram, @timatkinmw. See you next week.